It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, I got catfished this week. I may still be in the process, but I think I've finally given the game away and they're probably not going to respond again. I wasn't 100% sure it was catfish, but now, and I'm still, I guess I'm not 100%, but I am 99.999% sure it's catfish. And they've stopped texting, so. Yeah, it's not just for senior citizens and single people anymore. And this happens a lot. I've had this happen before and nothing came of it, where somebody texted me like they knew me. And I'm like, sorry, I don't know who this is. And in the past, they've been like, oh, is this so-and-so? And I'm like, nope. And they're like, oh, sorry, I must have the wrong number. And that's it. This time, they were like, I was like, do I know you? And she's like, yeah, is this Andy? And I was like, no, there's no Andy here. And we kept talking. She was very apologetic. She's like, I'm sorry, I haven't known him. I haven't talked to him in a long time. I was like, that's fine. And then she said, sometimes acquaintance is fate. We could be friends. And I said, this is how a lot of scams start. But as long as you don't ask me for bank details or to buy you iTunes cards, sure. And she, and this became a theme, ignored that part of my text. And just talked. There were several times where, like, key things that might, like, she just didn't respond to that part, which was very interesting. Also, by that night, so we're talking a little bit. She's in LA, and I'm in Iowa, and all, she loved Iowa, and her friends went here, went whatever, and lots of things. I mean, and this is weird, and I cannot explain it, and I don't want to be inappropriate. Lots of ways things were phrased made me think of someone who only kind of knows English. And not in the sense that the sentences were poorly constructed. It was almost an idiomatic thing. They just phrased things in certain ways. I shouldn't even say English. American. Like, we were talking very early on, I put in about my wife. Because... Just in general, I'm like, you know, this is probably a scam and I just don't want it to go down romantic road. I don't feel like that, whatever. And also it gets weird. I mean, I showed literally that night after a day of texting, I said to Trish, I was like, so I made a new friend today. And she said, yeah. And I just handed her the phone. I'm like, you should read this whole thing. But like at one point we were talking about, and I was talking about how I stay at home and she earns all the money. And she says, if she earns all the money, why are you the one that's retired? Which I was like, that's a but I explained that whole thing and I'm like, and we, it works well for us, we both like it. And she says, well, hopefully it makes it so you don't quarrel. And there was something about that phrasing that I was like, that sounds weird. And there just were occasional things like that, just word choices that I'm like, those are perfectly accurate, but it sounds like someone who learned English somewhere else, sort of. And of course, very early on, surprisingly, like that first night, she's like, I don't know what you look like. And I was like, okay, strangers just met on text, maybe a little early for that. I said that, but she's like, I thought maybe we could exchange pictures. And so I spent a couple hours, I was like, I can't do it now, but I'll have to look through my phone. And mostly I talk with Trish and I'm like, how does this get, like, how, what am I like, because you basically in a situation like this, you have to be very careful about every piece of information you give. And it's handy to have this podcast in this instance, because I'm basically like, anything I've put on this podcast, it's probably safe to give them. Assuming I'm not an idiot in the things I give out on this podcast, which I don't think I am. I don't think I have. Hello, listeners. I don't feel like I have given you all enough to do an identity theft on me. And what I finally settled on was a picture that it is a good picture in general, and it is an accurate picture of what I look like. It's also a picture that is my profile picture on Facebook and my profile picture on my author Twitter account at AK Parsons Books, if anybody wants to follow that. To be fair, I tweet almost never, but once I have something to tweet about, I definitely will, and that's awesome. Anyway, so I figured, like, this is also already a publicly available image. There's probably not a risk. So I sent, and I heard nothing back, and I was like, oh, maybe this was a real thing, and she saw me, and she wasn't into me. And maybe, because that was the thing, I was like, this is almost certainly a scam, but if it's not, it's a little sweet. I don't know, just wanted to make friends. And I'm like, this strikes me as a lonely person, whatever. But then yesterday afternoon, she's like, sorry, I didn't see this. Here's a picture of me. And she sends a picture, and I'm like, great, let's figure out how to do reverse image search. And it took me a surprisingly long time to figure out how to do it on my phone. I also learned that Google Lens has some pretty cool functions, because you can pick a part of the picture, and I was accidentally picking her top. And Google was showing me where I could buy her top. And I was like, that's kind of awesome. If I see something like an outfit I like on the internet, I can apparently get Google to tell me where I can get it. That's kind of cool. But I finally got it to work. And sure enough, the photo shows up a couple places under other names. It was one in particular in a company, and it was all in LinkedIn. So I can't get details because I'm not in LinkedIn. And I'll be damned if I'm going to join LinkedIn. But I'm like, this is a thing. I'm like, okay. So this is almost certainly a deal. But I'm just like playing it out a little. I'm like, is that a recent picture? Also, the person was supposedly based in Colorado and the company was based in Wisconsin, and none of these were places she had mentioned. So I'm like, so how long have you lived in LA? And she's like, I've been in America for 10 years. No answer to that question. And then she says, I have trouble noticing when you respond here. Have you heard of Telegram? It's how I talk with my friends and my family mostly. And I'm like, here we go. This is the start of something. I think the picture thing was just so she had an excuse to send me a picture. She was very attractive, by the way. It'd be weird if a scam was like, here's me, ugly. No. I was like, I have never heard of it. And it's true, I had never heard of it. And I looked it up, and apparently it's bigger than WhatsApp. It's like the biggest messaging service in the world nowadays, but not so much in the US. Also, unsurprisingly, it has a lot of people use it for scams. I don't think there's anything special about it for that, but it does happen. And so we were talking about this, and I don't know, last night she texted again, and I was start texting back, and I was like, so you only ever lived in LA in the US and all this? And finally I was like, also, because her name was Lydia, and the name of the person the picture was under was Letitia. And so I spent a little while going, could that be short? And so I actually was saying at one point, I was like, so, because I was doing a lot of like, so you lived in LA long, you must have a lot of friends and family abroad if you're using Telegram, because it's mostly for that. And I said, is Lydia short for something? And she said, name. And I said, Lydia is short for name? And she said, no. And I finally said, I'm asking because, like, Tony is short for Anthony. And I just wondered if it was short for something. And then a few minutes later, I texted, because the picture you sent is coming up attached to a different name. And I heard nothing. And I finally said, well, I got to go to bed. Good night, Lydia, winky emoji. I have not heard back since. And I don't know why, because once we hit acquaintance can also be fate, I was at 75% certainty it was a scam. And by the end, like I said, I was at 99.999% certainty it was a scam. I'm still disappointed. And not that I wanted to make a new friend, but I was like, I just hate confirming that this is a thief. Like, it was nice to imagine what kind of person this could be who just didn't think of it. Epilogue to this story. Like I said, haven't heard since. Although, compared to yesterday, I might hear it, but I don't think so. I think I called a bluff there and it's done. But epilogue to the story. About an hour ago, I got a different text from a different number, although same area code, asking how I was doing. And I was like, who is this? And they said, it's Hannah. We traveled together in the past and you gave me your number. Have you forgotten? This one's easy. I believe I have known exactly one Hannah in my life. We never traveled anywhere. So I wrote back, not ringing any bells. Last name? No response. And after a while, because I was annoyed, I did a pretty long thing. I was like, am I on a list? Because one of you just did this a couple days ago. And I mean, it's kind of fun to play with y'all, but I feel like your job takes a lot of effort and I don't like wasting your time. So maybe it'd just be easier if you took me off the list. And then I was like, or is this the same person who talked to me as Lydia? In which case you goofed. This is the same number. You should move on to the next one. And I haven't heard back from Hannah either. But man, I don't know what's going on.
That one's really tempting to.
I've never messed with that one. Like I said, every other time I've had wrong number text before. And it was very much a, nope, this is the wrong one. Okay, bye. And that was it. These two in the span of like 3 days. And one wasn't even a wrong number text. I've just forgotten that I traveled with her and gave her my number. And it's even extra funny because you know how little time I've had a cell phone. So I've been texting for like less than 10 years. So it's like, yeah, not only do I know that wasn't the case based on the name, and also the fact that I don't tend to just travel with people that I don't actually like know well, but there's not a long period of time that that even could have happened compared to a lot of other people. So I don't know what's going on, but it's weird.
I mean, weren't you tempted to do something like, you know, Hannah, I've been looking for you everywhere. Where did you take our son or something? I don't know. I mean, anything crazy like that, just to see
if
what she
Hannah
would do.
Had been the he, first he one. Definitely. But I kind of was over it after Lydia. Yeah, also, it's not as fun as it sounds. I guess it might have been more fun if I had very deliberate. Like, I didn't do the bit where I play the idiot. I also didn't do the bit where I play the skeptic, other than the thing up front where I was like, this is how scams happen, which apparently didn't stop her. Because I did say we could be friends, and I meant it. I'm like, if this turns out not to be a scam, like, if nobody asks me for any PII or anything, sure, why not? This could be a fun story someday. It's like a pen pal or whatever. That could be a thing. And I like to give people the benefit of the doubt when I can afford to do it, and this was an example where I could. But if you're playing it straight, scammers are extremely boring to talk to. Because they're giving you very targeted information and avoiding giving you other information and saying just the most banal shit. Like, I was the whole, if your wife made all the money, why are you the one retired? Was far and away the most interesting and original thing she said in our not minor conversation over the last 2 days. It's all just very, very basic, very boring stuff, and mostly excuses, either just skipping questions or excuses for why it took so long to text or why they didn't respond to this or whatever. And that was the thing, like, if before I decided to sort of give up the game with Lydia, I was like, I seriously need to say, I know we said we want to try to be friends, but other than exchanging one pick each and knowing what state we live in and me knowing she works a job with irregular hours and her knowing I'm married and retired, we know nothing about each other. I'm like, we have not hit friends. We certainly haven't hit download a whole new app to talk to you. But it ended. So yeah, that's been a weird day. I just crave that social contact because I have none except you. And
that is sad.
It really is. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast where you can fool some of the William all the time and all of the William some of the time, but you can't fool Tony. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 607.
Have you ever had that? I've had scam emails, and I've had scam phone calls, although those tend to end pretty fast. Although I used to fuck around with some people on phone calls, especially when I was a receptionist. But I never had a text one before.
I've never gotten a wrong text.
I've definitely gotten that.
That's never happened to me. I get spam texts, but they're like, you know, you can tell they're spam.
Yeah.
There's nobody there wanting to talk to you, really. It's just
a big wall of text wanting to sell you. For me, it's a lot of flower bulbs in bulk. That was one I got a lot for a while. I don't know why. But yeah. I'm not going to say I'm like super smart. I spend a lot of time on text. And I am familiar with these kinds of scams. And I have also worked in a corporate environment where I've literally had training on avoiding these kind of scams. And I wasn't fooled. But I wasn't fooled after. Like, at first, I thought it was a genuine, like, literally, the sometimes acquaintance is fate was the moment where I was like, oh. Because I'm very verbose. So, like, she says, hi. I say, who is this? She says, this is Lydia. Is this not Andy? And I was like, no. And I was like, who's Andy? And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Andy's this person. I'm sorry I bothered you. And I'm very me. So I'm like, no, you didn't bother me at all. It's fine. I hope you can find Andy. It's great. And so, to me, I'm like, the only reason this conversation is still going is mostly because I'm keeping it going. But then when she hits that point, specifically says, we can be friends, I'm like, what about this made you want to be friends with me? Just because I wasn't a dick when you texted the wrong person? So, I mean, I was pretty quickly onto it. But, like, what I'm trying to say is, I'm not sure, at least to a degree, I don't think I want to judge people who fall for these. I see why people fall for these. I didn't, but there, but for the grace of Jeebus, you know, it's pretty close. And yeah. I have known smart people who fall for it. To be fair, the ones I know that people have fallen for have been way smarter than this. There's some ways. Like, if I was going to do this, I think I could be pretty successful. Because there are just certain things. Like, I know what to watch out for, which means I know what people who watch out for. So I'd know to do something different. And like the ones I've heard people have fallen for, I'm like, that's kind of original. And I think I could see me screwing that up. But yeah, it was kind of interesting. So anyway, if you are just joining us for the first time, or maybe you got this podcast accidentally, in which case I apologize, but we can still be friends. Sometimes acquaintance is fate.
Sometimes.
Jesus, that's the title, isn't it? Like, already, I don't know, maybe we'll come up with, hopefully we'll come up with something funny. Anyway, this show, we have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people write into that email address. Some. We're getting low again. themagicaltalking@gmail.com, and they write in with whatever the crap they feel like. And the hat magically, on its own, forwards us the emails, and then we read them and we talk about them. That's it. And usually it takes us a long time to get to that. And it's been 2 weeks since we talked. So how's that been? Did you cry a lot because I wasn't here?
No. So, you know, Halloween happened. Beggars Night happened over here. Took the grandson out. That was fun.
You didn't send me no pictures of that.
Why didn't I have some? I can send them.
Is he the dinosaur again?
Mm-hmm.
That is a good one.
Yep. I imagine next year, by then he'll probably be, you know, talking. So he's not talking yet, but he is communicating, if that makes any sense. I mean, there's lots of ways to communicate besides just verbal. He communicates very well in just about every other way. And his mom was the same. She you could totally understand what she was trying to communicate. And she started, her verbal communication was later than her brother's. But,
communication was even later.
I presume that after another year, that, you know, kind of like his mom, you know, he'll just be talking like any other. By then he'll be a, you know, 2.5-year-old, and he'll probably have some kind of opinion as to what his costume should be. I mean, this year we just bought him one and he did like it. He liked wearing it. He liked putting it on. But
I think I didn't have an opinion about my costume until surprisingly late in the game, like 6 or 7, because I was just a clown until that point. And that's the costume that they had. And they put me in it every year and they painted up my face. And I think I kind of just didn't care because I was like, yeah, the whole deal here is I'm just getting candy.
I mean, he might be like that. He might not care.
It's hard to say. At a certain point, I definitely started having opinions. And very quickly, they became very strong opinions.
Yeah. But so he was, you know, in the world, the Halloween before, but he was, you know, he couldn't walk around or anything. So this was really the first Halloween of his life, but it was the first Halloween where he could go, you know, collect candy and
trick or treat. Yeah.
So we didn't go very many places. It took him a little while to catch on to what the whole thing really was. You know, it's like, wait, we're going to go. We just got here. We're leaving. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Going to go to the next place. Then I think he figured it out. And, you know, we probably got candy buckets in this house all over the place, but I couldn't find one. So I just had a bag that I took, and it wasn't long before he was, you know, he'd take some candy and put it in there. So he had it figured out pretty quickly. I think he liked it. I think he thought it was fun. But so yeah, that was pretty cool. That's been the first time in years that, you know, I've had taken a kid out in the neighborhood. The last time I did that was probably, I mean, easily 10 or 15 years ago, maybe. I don't know. It's been a long time.
Mine's been somewhere 30 some odd years. There was an age where it was arguable that me and my friends were too old to trick or treat. But the way me and one friend got around it is we still dressed up in costume and we took his little brothers trick-or-treating. And so we also trick-or-treated. And I was probably in middle school then. And then very quickly it got old enough where I'm like, I don't want to trick-or-treat anyway. And they aren't my kids. So when the hell do I care?
I want to say it was 12 or 13 years ago. But and so then we had a big, you know, we like to have a big almost Thanksgiving like meal.
Yeah, y'all eat for Halloween. I remember
that. Yeah. So we did that, and that was a really good time. And then of course there's been school, and also we're still watching A Haunting. We just watched an episode. So funny. we just watched an episode and I'm watching it thinking, man, this feels like a backdoor pilot, because usually in the dramatizations, you know, there's no like character development, right? They're just dramatizations. They're just,
yeah, no, this is documentary television, essentially. You can't have spinoffs and shit. Yeah.
But they were doing things with these characters, like trying to make them funny, I think. And they were having little private moments that were sort of developing character that I'd never seen them do in the show before. And they were even doing some things with the investigators that came to sort of develop their character. And I thought, this is very odd.
You know what happened? They listened to last week's podcast and they were like, oh, they think we're a joke. We need to punch this up a little bit.
But I'm just thinking, are you guys going to start a show with these characters and stuff? I don't know. It's weird. But also, I was thinking, another interesting thing about this episode is I was thinking over the last couple of weeks how these paranormal investigators claim to want, a lot of them say, well, our method is to go debunk the thing. That's what we're going to do first. And if we can't debunk it, then, you know, that gives it some credibility, which, of course, they do a terrible job debunking, or they don't know what debunk means. But
it's the place where you go to sleep.
But I was starting to think, why don't you take someone who has some expertise in mental health? Because, you know, if this person's claiming to hear voices and all these things, and you have a professional there who can go, yeah, this person's got schizophrenic symptoms, this isn't a haunting, you know, wouldn't you want that? And even if you did decide, well, the person's not schizophrenic, they're really experiencing these things, you know, your whole point of being there, and these investigators, you know, humble brag all the time about how they're helping people and all this stuff. It's like, so you're acknowledging that the people going through these things are experiencing some real trauma here, but you're not bringing anyone along who might be able to help with that. But so this episode, I was thinking about that. In this episode, the investigators did think the guy might be mentally ill. They almost wrote it off, filed a report saying that it wasn't a haunting. This guy was just had a mental illness. But I, to my knowledge, I mean, I should look them up, because I have looked up sometimes I look these people up, these paranormal researchers. And one time, one of them did have like a degree in mental health or something, which I was surprised to see, because usually, you know, they don't have a degree in anything.
That's how they learned that they can scam people like this.
I guess. So this person might know, one of these two people might have known something about mental illness or whatever, but I don't think so. I think they were going there. They were deciding this person might have a mental illness, and then they were going to fill out their form saying this isn't a haunting, and then they were just going to get on with it. Well, you went there to help these people, presumably, right? This is your whole thing, is helping people. You've just discovered, you think, in no professional opinion, but in your, you know, amateur opinion, this person has a mental health issue and you're just not going to do anything.
There's this very specific set of ways they want to help people, and that's not one of them. But I can actually explain to you why this hasn't happened on one of these shows where you bring in a mental health expert. Recently, I have seen commercials on YouTube for a new upcoming reality show. I do not recall the title, but the premise is we took a whole bunch of J-list celebrities, Q-list, like really a whole bunch of people that you're like, I think I remember them, or people that you do remember but definitely haven't done anything to speak of in a long time. And it's a bunch of ex-special forces guys who have created this boot camp, basically, that is supposedly based on actual special forces training. And it's going to go through, and it's just, you know, prove their endurance and ability to not quit and all the shit. And one of the people that's going to be on this show is Dr. Drew Pinsky. And so he was clearly too busy while they were filming these haunting shows, and he's the only person I can think of who actually has credentials but would debase himself enough to do this kind of thing. So clearly it was just a schedule conflict.
Yeah, a schedule conflict, sure.
I mean, I guess Dr. Phil, where's Dr. Phil? I mean, Dr. Phil's probably doing more lucrative deals than a haunting.
The thing is, you wouldn't even
and also Dr. Phil doesn't have any working credentials anymore. So
you wouldn't even have to find someone who believed in any of it, because that's irrelevant. I mean, you know, when someone's having experienced stress and whatever, it doesn't matter if they think it's ghosts or whatever. That you don't, and you as a therapist don't have to decide
the
whether or not
the coolest idea real I've ever heard of for a ghost hunting paranormal investigation show is one where somebody is a big believer and somebody else is a total skeptic. And I think that's actually a really good way to do it. Unfortunately, while I have encountered this several times, it's all been fake in horror movies. I don't know why a real ghost hunter show hasn't done this, because I think it's a really good idea. But well, the answer might be because the skeptic would fucking run away with it and be like this. But you could still fake that. You could have a skeptic be like, I don't. I mean, hell, X-Files did it for the first 5 seasons.
I mean, I think I've seen this kind of thing before, and the skeptic is never much of a skeptic. That's part of the problem.
Well, and but it's tricky if it's a series, because if you're a skeptic, either you stop being a skeptic pretty quick, or like 11 of the 12 episodes this season, we find absolutely nothing.
Well, and as I say, it wouldn't be hard. Like, you wouldn't have to find a person who is a professional in mental health who believes, and the professional, him or herself, would acknowledge, I don't have to believe what the person's telling me.
No, absolutely. I just think mental health professionals have too much self-respect, except for Dr. Phil and Dr. Drupinski.
No. But
to do something like this.
But the thing is, a haunting does, it has these dramatizations, but they're also interviewing the people that went through it. So you get a pretty good idea of how they experienced this thing. And sometimes they're having some pretty serious issues. Like, the kind of issues where I think that a lot of professionals would gladly go along just in case someone needs, like, you know what I mean?
Once you get your master's, you could pitch it to them. Would you do it?
So I don't know how often this happens, but I mean, you know, they've got plenty of episodes and none of them seem to be filler, and these paranormal people are still working. So I think it happens enough. And based on what I've seen, every single time someone goes out to one of these things, there's a person there in distress, a person who should be seeing a therapist, maybe not to prove whether or not the thing's real, but just because they're going through stress, a significant, like they're losing sleep. They're afraid they're going to lose their job. I mean, some serious stuff, the kind of stuff that most people do go to a therapist for. So I think I'd be tempted to. Yeah, I think you'd be tempted to go to a thing and just to see, make sure everybody's there. Everybody there is actually okay, because as much as these paranormal people are showing up, who care about them and want to help them, you know, this is their life's work. They, you know, so far these people seem remarkably unconcerned with the actual mental health of people who are actually in distress. I mean, unless it's a hoax, of course. But I mean, some of these people are really in distress.
It could be a hoax. No.
The show started to have, it didn't used to do this, but it started to have actual evidence. Like, it'll show the actual photo that someone took, or the actual.
Did you get to see the orbs?
Well, I have seen some orbs, but I've also seen some like doors open and a doll's head move and stuff. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's so fake or not really definitive, like one of these things, yeah, where a door,
or just some basic aspects of physics.
One of them was a door opened, but the camera was like zoom, like I don't know if the person who set up the camera I don't know, or if they zoomed it in because it looked more convincing, I don't know, but this door opened on a cabinet, but also something was falling, so it looked more like something had been on top of the cabinet and the cabinet was tall, so you can imagine someone barely getting it up there, and then the thing falls, bumps the door.
Sorry,
and the
I'm
door,
adjusting my camera slightly,
and then the door finger. Comes open. That's what it looks. That's what it looks like happened. But someone short tried to put something up there, didn't quite get it up there. It fell, hit the door, and the door swung open. But the angle was zoomed in enough that you couldn't really see it like that. And there was a few other things that happened, but everything was happening off the screen. And you're just wondering, why isn't this a wide camera angle of this whole room so you can see all this stuff going on?
What do you
on?
Mean, why isn't this?
Well, we know
you
why.
Know why. And this is but the this... thing. There is a market out there for... Here's behind the scenes of supposed reality stuff. And there's ones about magicians. There's ones about all sorts of reality. I've told you some of the ones about reality shows and how much it's fake and behind how they do it and everything. There has never been one for paranormal investigations. And I think there should be. But the reason I think there isn't is nobody believes it for a second. They're all like, what kind of behind the scenes show would that be? The show would be like, yeah, it's all fake, except the stuff you see that means nothing. And that stuff, the way they do that is it means nothing. They say it means stuff, but it clearly means nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, then you notice the things they don't show you too. And it's like, okay, so, oh, also in this one. So something has happened. There's been a couple shows like this, but now I'm only just catching on to the pattern. Somehow, I guess, in the paranormal community, the term poltergeist, if it ever meant an angry ghost that's like doing a lot of psychokinetic activity or whatever, if it ever meant that, it doesn't mean that anymore. Now, a poltergeist is if you have psychic powers, but you don't know it, and you're inadvertently manifesting your psychic powers as a poltergeist.
Yeah.
Although in this show, they said that the manifestation can actually kind of take on a life of its own. So it's still a supernatural thing. I don't know, but I thought, well, that's
psychic. I mean, that's supernatural. No, Trish has talked before a lot. If you go back into older records of poltergeist activity and suspected poltergeist activity, there is a very high correlation with a teenage girl living in the house. And she always finds that very interesting. No, but I mean, just, I mean, we know I don't believe in this stuff, which is fine. Whatever. And maybe I'm wrong. But here's what I would say. If it was true, and I was part of like a paranormal investigation group and went somewhere and saw anything that like convinced me, that would absolutely change my entire life. I don't know what. I would kill myself. I would join a monastery. I certainly wouldn't be like, well, what house are we going to check out next week? I would be like, holy shit, there's fucking ghosts. And so your answer is either it's a bunch of paranormal experts who have literally never found anything to convince them. Or.
Interesting.
It's all bullshit. Because I'm like, imagine that. Imagine you went on this thing. Imagine you got your master's and a haunting put an ad on Craigslist that said, we decided we want to throw in some mental health professionals. Well, and you're browsing Craigslist looking for a job as usual. And you're like, maybe I'll do this. And they're like, well, he seems like a terrific on-screen presence. Let's take him. And he's got his degree from an online university. What do we got to lose?
Right.
It's very on brand for us. And yeah. So you go on and you fucking like see stuff. Like, I don't think you would just be like, all right, let's do what's next week's episode. Like, I think that would fundamentally change. You'd be like, holy shit. Like, I think I saw ghosts. I can't explain this to a degree. I mean, because we both talked about, like, also we could be like, that's clearly something to happen. But if like you saw enough evidence that you're like, I don't know another answer other than there's fucking ghosts. Like, you wouldn't then just continue to be a dude on a reality show. I do not think that is the case. You would start your own fucking ministry or do a fucking Harry Houdini thing and pay a bunch of charlatans to try and contact your mom, like he did. I'm just like, this isn't, and it's the same thing I talked about where everybody's like, I want to get proof. And there's like, there's no such thing as proof in this case. There is no evidence that you could get that would convince the general public that that's definitely a ghost. And so like, even though I am willing to concede, I could be wrong about the supernatural and about ghosts. I still am absolutely certain all of these shows have found nothing. I am confident that a ghost has never gone near one of these shows. Even if they're out there, they did not appear, so to speak, on a haunting.
I just picture all these ghosts now, like, they'll see an investigation like, or something, and they're looking
they
at
got
like
cameras. Well, don't even go there, dude.
Who is it? A haunting? No. Oh. Who's over here? Oh, it's the ghost hunters. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We should go over there. Like that. We should
and
do
then,
that.
And then the apparition appears, like, "Hello, big fan. I've watched all your stuff. Season 3, episode 2. That was my friend. His name's Hank." He said you were real nice.
But he went into the light, so I can't introduce you to him.
Yeah, he's gone. What? What does that mean? There's another thing after. It goes alive, ghost. I can't tell you.
But I mean, there's so many things like this show. For example, like, you know, conspiracy theories, this show, evolutionary psychology, where.
I'm sorry. You are not wrong to include that in that grouping, but I never thought of it that way, and I'm very tickled.
But what all of
that
these
is
having
fair. Conspiracy theory, ghosts, evo psych. That is absolutely fair.
What they all have in common is they seem to think that a compelling narrative is the same as evidence, right? If I tell a story and it's a cool sounding story, gets me all worked up and I can tell it to someone and they're excited about it. Well, that's evidence that it's true. Which, yeah, of course, is not how it works. But all of, you know, and I could probably name all kinds of other examples of the same thing where a person is not doing any investigating. They're not building a case. They don't have any systematic, they don't have a theory. They don't have a model for how this all works or how to test it. All they have is a ghost story, which again, that's what conspiracy theories are too. A ghost story that might make a cool movie. Well, that means it must be true. It's like, no, that's.
Well, but people go on and tell them, and you're also missing a fundamental thing underlying all of this. Things are not the way most people believe. And if you're perceptive and smart enough, like I am, I being the dude on the show, or I being one of the people watching the show unironically, I am smart enough to see the truth, even though most people cannot. And it's also a very common attitude I think anyone takes when they are in the drastically small minority of an opinion on something. You have to get it in your head that, like, people just don't get it, but I get it. And maybe I can't explain it to you in a way that your logic and science will convince you, but you just have to get it.
The thing is, like, the people who are having these experiences,
hell, it's also the basis for most religious faith.
Well, or it's the basis for proselytizing religions. I mean,
that is much more fair. That is much more fair to say.
I don't have the people who are experiencing these things. I have, first of all, I'm not saying that they're not experiencing these things or it's not true or anything. I don't know. All I can say is there's not enough evidence, and there are other explanations that don't upset the whole project of science. So that's all I can say. My, when I have issues, it's with the investigators and the things they do, the things they say, the narrative they spin about what's going on that seems to just be completely out of their backsides, but they act like it's not, like they're informed somehow about some actual facts or truth. And there's just something about all of that I find irresponsible, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that's just TV. Again, based on my expertise of having seen many, many of these as fake in horror movies. So that expertise, it is not uncommon that even if you are a believer, you're like, but it's a TV show. So I may be convinced by the almost nothing that just happened. But we should really, you got to spin it in such a way to make it compelling TV. And we're not lying, but we are presenting it in its best light, as it were.
Well, you know, except for like dramatic Final Destination or Saw style deaths, outside of that, just about everything you've ever seen in a, maybe not a horror, maybe like a supernatural thriller or, you know, Conjuring or any of the kind of that kind of thing, has been claimed to happen. Like, I can't think of a single thing that happened in any of the Conjuring movies that I haven't seen someone claim happened to them in these shows. You know, I used to think, oh, levitation, that, you know, nobody who's actually witnessed an exorcism, because exorcisms happen, has ever seen that happen. Well, some people in these shows claim it has. Or lights going off and on, you know, and the house positively shaking. You see that in movies all the time. It's like, okay, that's an added for drama. No, these people are claiming this actually happens during these things. It's like, okay.
You do get that the entire Conjuring series is literally based off of the casework of the platonic ideal of these people. the right combination of really untested faith and a desire to convince people whether it's true or not, which is the Warrens to a T. Which is why I still can't make myself watch those movies. They are such a touchstone of the horror genre now. I keep feeling like I should, and I'm like, I don't want to give those assholes, even in absentia, my time and energy. It's not... Well, you know how I am with horror. And if it's about a person doing something awful, I don't want to watch it. If Satan's involved, I'm there. To me, the Conjuring movies are a retelling of people doing something awful. And I know in the movies, it's actual demons or whatever. But to me, I'm like, no, it's just we're glorifying people who fucked people over and did some real damage.
Well, these investigators... I mean, some of them might be just outright charlatans, but I think most of them believe their own stuff. I mean,
I'd be willing to guess they're, like I said, willing to spin things to make for better television, even if they are believers. Because sure, for all the reasons you specified, if they didn't feel that way, they would be fucking doing a better job at actually investigating.
Or helping people, like, you know, when
I don't call it mollifying someone's fears and relieving their anxiety. Those are not necessarily helping. And I think that's all that's happening.
Because when a person in a helping profession, as they're sometimes called, a police, EMT, fire person, or someone in my profession, when someone's in the helping profession and they go somewhere where people need help, they find out from those people what they need help with, and they do that thing. They don't just show up and say, I'm here to do this. Do you need me to do this? No? Okay, see ya. I mean, you know, if I'm a mental health professional showing up at a situation where people need help and someone needs a glass of water, I go get a glass of water. I mean, you know, or they need some basic first aid. If I know how to do it, I do that. I mean, maybe I won't talk to them at all about mental health for a long time because I'm too busy meeting their immediate needs or whatever. But these people seem unconcerned about anything else except setting up their equipment, feeling the room, how heavy it is, and telling these people some story that they'll believe.
And if somebody's scared their house is haunted and is going to kill their children or whatever, which of these is better? Convincing them, no, there's no such thing. This is not what's happening. Here's probably what's happening. It's fine. Or being like, yep, there was one, but we saged it out of here. You're fine now. Both of those, in theory, leave that person no longer afraid. But I feel like one
maybe
fundamentally fucks with their view of the world that could have terrible repercussions later on them and on people that they talk to. Well, just to the degree that, what if it is a mental health thing? And I have a mental health issue that makes me think I'm being haunted, and you convince me that you sent the ghost away. I feel better now. Odds are I still have the same mental health issues, but I'm not going to get any help. I'm just going to go about my life because you got rid of the ghost. Thank you very much.
Until the next ghost comes along.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
And maybe
I
mean, that ghost is much more physical, and I try stabbing this one.
Yeah, that would be tragic.
I mean, ghosts can do a lot of creepy things that could cause me to do terrible stuff. Which, let's talk about this. I do not want this to just turn into a podcast that we just debunk and argue about paranormal investigation, which we are like half an episode away from becoming.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm into it. I'm clearly into it also, but I think it's a bad podcast for us.
Okay.
To dedicate multiple consecutive episodes. I'm going to say, did you, even though I'm pretty sure you did. Did you watch the Guillermo del Toro Cabinet of Curiosities stuff?
Just a couple.
By which do you mean two?
Yes, I mean two.
Yes.
First two.
And then did you perhaps say, these kind of suck, we're going to stop? Or maybe you said it nicer. Maybe you said, that wasn't very good. And then you just haven't gotten around to watching anymore. Because the first two were not very good. And in fact, after the second one, Trish said she's out.
Yeah, I mean, the first two aren't very good. But I felt like this. I liked this. I thought the second one was interesting for the directorial vision. I mean, I thought it was shot really. I thought, okay, well, this might be interesting to watch some of these just to see how different directors are doing their thing. Also, they seemed to connect the second one to the first one.
How so?
Well, I'm pretty sure. Well, should I say? I mean, I'm going to give stuff away about the plot.
Okay. I didn't notice any connection.
Like it's happening in the same mythos is what I'm getting at.
Oh, you think?
I think so. And so I started to become fascinated with this idea of let's have kind of an anthology. We'll let different directors, whatever. And the idea is going to be that, you know, there's going to like, you know, there's going to some Lovecraftian thing happened in the past and sometimes in the recent past. And, you know, there's a temple that's buried over here. And there's a summoning circle that's still active over here. And all these stories are just going to be people sort of accidentally tripping upon these things and having experiences. We're not going to see the actual cultists. We're not going to get any actual plot for why this is where it is and how it got there. These are all going to be stories of people just going about their lives and they run into this thing and then hijinks ensue, as you like to say.
That's a really neat idea. That's definitely not what's happening. The third episode has nothing to do with anything like
okay,
that.
Okay, so you've already been watching it.
Well, like I said, so again, we are recording a podcast, so I should say for people, there is a series. It's only eight episodes. They released them in little bits because of Halloween on Netflix called Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities. Guillermo del Toro hosts them like a weird Rod Serling, Alfred Hitchcock thing, which proves to me what I already suspected. He's an amazing visual effects guy. He's a decent director, not so much a good actor. But anyway, he presents them, and it's an anthology of just horror stories. I think the first one, he wrote the short story that it was based on, but he didn't write the teleplay and he didn't direct. He had like nothing to do with the second. Like he's not particular. He's just presenting. Like he's not particularly involved. He created the series, but each one, and it's an anthology with different directors, which means it's a crapshoot. This happens all the time. I am compelled to watch all those stupid VHS movies, even though they are 95% absolute trash. Mm-hmm. I watched the most recent one, VHS 99. It was awful. I don't know why I watched it. Weirdly, the last story, kind of good. I kind of liked it. It was a little original. Extra weirdly, the framing story for that movie was the second to last story. So I don't even know how that works, but whatever. And it's the same thing here. So the first one, dull. Like, you knew what was going to happen. It was very straightforward. It was horrific in that everything sucked. Like, everyone was shitty. And even the one nice person ended up being shitty because of, like, a just, like, in a revenge, whatever. It was, you see the, you know how it's going to go. It's not interesting.
Not really.
The second one, visually very interesting.
I thought so.
There were some good performances. The atmosphere was good. Yeah. In general, the story was, again, incredibly basic and pedestrian and sort of an excuse to just have some creature work. Didn't really care. Didn't really like it. At this point, my wife noped out. Today, I watched the third one.
Hmm.
It is, if not one of the best horrors I've seen, it's definitely one of the best I have seen in a long time.
Hmm.
It is solid horror. It is very tense, very atmospheric, very well done. It does get quite gory near the end, but in a not at all like gratuitous, like it's there's it makes sense and it's chilling to watch it near the end and stuff, but amazing. It also has a lot of big names involved. David Pryor directed, David S. Goyer, who's not the same as David A. Goyer, wrote the teleplay for it. And the two leads are Glenn Turman and F. Murray Abraham, both of whom I love.
Jeez Louise.
And it's just really good. So I cannot speak for anything past that, but I would recommend to people, find Cabinet of Curiosities on Netflix and watch the third episode, if that at all sounds good to you, because I was really impressed. But the first two, you can absolutely skip. And I will continue to watch the others, and probably most won't be so great, but it's just, I am a sucker for a horror anthology.
Yeah, me too. We hadn't decided to stop.
And they're almost always bad. Like, I would say out of all the stories in individual horror anthologies I have seen, easily three quarters were garbage. I've seen a lot of them, but easily three quarters of individual stories, not full movies, because frequently full movies have like three shitty ones and one good one or whatever. And I mean, and I've watched ones from the 60s and 70s. I've watched ones from now. I've watched ones that were meant to be more spooky, and I've watched ones that are very much about gore, and I would say about three quarters of them aren't worth it, and the other quarter are good, and it's not a fair deal, and I don't know why I keep watching them, but it is a compulsion. But yeah, episode three, watch episode three, it's very good.
What else did you do for the last 2 weeks?
Well, I mean, I left the state for a week.
Oh yeah,
that's why we had to record too.
Yeah.
Sorry, in all the wonderful paranormal investigations you had back in your head there, you probably forgot about
that. I did forget.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, come on, don't be mad. All right,
new title of this episode. This is the episode where we find out William is a bad friend.
Don't be mad. Just
leave the state for a week. I don't even remember. I went to visit my family. You know.
Yes.
That thing you're real into. not my family. You and Vin Diesel, all about family.
All about family, man.
And Corona.
Family Fast and Furious.
The three F's.
Yep, the three F's.
Family Fast and Furious is the title of the not picked up animated children spinoff they were going to do. Or is that Family Friendly Fast and Furious? I don't know. It's too many F's.
Too many F's.
So I went. We went out to the Pacific Northwest. We spent a few days with my family, and then a few days in a cabin up off of the Washougal River in the Columbia River Gorge. The time with my family was good. It was very short, but I think it was largely very positive. Had a pretty good time. So that was nice. The cabin was also it's cropping up so many of these places that are clearly designed to be vacation rentals, which means they tend to just have weird setups. Like where this one, don't drink the water. Like, we had three sources of water. We had the water coming out of the plumbing, which you are instructed not to drink. We had water coming out of a separate tap on the kitchen sink, which we are told is technically potable, but will not taste good. And then the third thing is we had a fucking water cooler where we just got water from. And we mostly use that. And then one time, I have this thing I do sometimes because I'm lazy and to save times, I'll brush my teeth in the shower. Only did that once, because just having to taste the water for brushing my teeth.
That bad, huh?
Just the little, yeah. Also, in the month of October, I visited two places where you could not get a cell signal. And before then, I had visited zero. So that was weird. But it was very nice. Here's the other thing I need to say. And I can say this because it's entirely legal there. And so that's the thing. Oregon weed is no joke. Like, I know I've said in general that this, like, post-legalization weed is pretty serious, but, like, comparable doses of edibles from the stuff that I might get when I'm in Illinois doesn't hold a patch to the shit I get in Oregon. And I think it's because Oregon's more hippie-ish, and so they get more artisanal about it. Because here's the thing about marijuana, for those of you who don't know.
I don't know.
So a lot of you probably know two chemicals involved, one called THC and one called CBD, because that's the ones everybody talks about. And THC is the thing that gets you high. And CBD is the thing that has all the medical properties that we're still just learning about because there's so little research that has been allowed on it. But pain management and help with a lot of disease treatment, including some cancer fighting implications in some studies. So those are the two things. So THC, if you want to get high, CBD, if you need it for medical reasons, frequently a combination of the two. Although now that people have been working at it, they make strains mostly with a lot of THC and not so much CBD. But then you can find some that are designed specifically for medical reasons. But here's the thing. There are a shit ton of other things in there. Terpenes and cannabinoids, of which THC and CBD are just two out of the like 400 that are in there. And nobody knows a lot about the other ones. But what they have figured out is that it does something to the psychoactive effects. So if I'm got something with just straight THC in it, I'll get high. But if it's got some of the other stuff, the high will be different. And the things I bought in Oregon would include bits like resin and stuff like that that's still going to have more of those other chemicals. And so the experience was different. And in particular, one I bought, which they were gummies. That's frequently how I do it. First of all, the gummies were tasty. Like, normally when I have a cannabis gummy, I'm like, oh, this tastes good. No, it doesn't. Like, for a second, you're like, oh, cherry. And then you're like, oh, no, cherry and pine needles. Let's just chew it down. No, these tasted good. I savored it. It was good stuff. But also, I took the usual dose I take, and a couple hours later, I was like, oh no. This feels much crazier than what I was expecting. And Trish, who doesn't do a lot of this stuff, took less of a dose than she usually did. And in my personal feeling, having observed her, was way higher than she normally is. So the time in the cabin, I believe, was pleasant, but I'm a little fuzzy on some of it. But it did work. By the end, I was really kind of tired of doing that, and I was ready to be home, and it was very relaxing, and I feel a lot better from it. And although air travel still absolutely sucks so much, it's awful. It is built with no consideration for comfort, care, ease, anything, unless you're willing to pay extra for every little bit. Still awful. But it went very well for us.
That's
we
good.
Caught all of our connections. None of our flights were delayed. The time went by pretty fast. Funny thing, going out to Oregon, the way we do it, there's usually a very short flight that's about an hour, and then a longer flight that's like 3 hours. And on the longer one, we're frequently on a big enough plane that it gives us little screens in the seats and free entertainment.
Sure.
And they'll have movies, and they'll frequently have even some movies that like have left theaters but not made it to video yet and things like that, but also lots of other things. I mostly work with Bluetooth headsets now, so I didn't have anything to plug into the headphone jack. So I can't listen to any of it. Same with Trish. But she watched something and just had the captions on. I'm looking for something, and I find Beverly Hills Cop, which is a movie, as we all know, that I adore, that I have watched, that I literally recorded off of television and then wore out the VHS tape watching. And Beverly Hills Cop 2, also, same exact deal. But they had Beverly Hills Cop on here, so I'm like, oh, watch that. Unfortunately, this version of Beverly Hills Cop did not have any captions because it's older, and I guess nobody bothered. I watched the entirety of Beverly Hills Cop with no sound and no captions. And I'm going to go ahead and say here, it probably was the same experience for me that it would have been had I been listening, because I know everything that happened. Like, I'm not going to say I knew exactly every line, but probably 80% of them. And in the other ones, I knew what the gist of what they were. I knew what was happening in that scene. I remembered that scene. And I'm simultaneously kind of proud and ashamed of that at the same time. But I did, like, every single bit. It was, I kind of almost did it as a dare to myself, and it absolutely worked. And I haven't seen that in many years, but I watched it so many times before. It's just all in there. And it doesn't hold up well in terms of not being problematic. Right. And it's definitely one of those that I'm like, I still love this movie. And like, I'm not saying I should. I'm not saying anyone should. And I'm not saying there aren't a host of reasons why this is not a good thing. But it just hit me at the right age. And I still love it. And I can't help myself. It's one of the purest forms of that for me. There's a lot of things that I used to love that I don't watch because I'm worried they're going to be ruined for me.
Yeah.
But this one, I'm like, this movie is 1,000 kinds of problematic. And I still love it. And if anybody else was like, oh my God, that's disgusting, I'm offended to even see it, I'd be like, yeah, I get that. Absolutely. That's the fair and rational view to take on this. But I still love it. And the second one, not so much the third. So yeah, then we came home, and we saw some other movies while we were there too. Again, we've been trying to sort of do the spooky deal.
Yeah.
So I watched a movie that's actually pretty good called The Night House, and it's on HBO Max. And it's not mind blowing, but it's a somewhat clever story that I hadn't encountered. It's not one of the seven horror movie plots that all horror movies are. And it was well performed and it was decently shot and good tension. So if anybody has HBO Max, which I also recommend HBO Max as a streaming service, I would recommend checking that out. I think you'd enjoy it. I don't think you'd be blown away, but it's good. Okay. We also watched Tucker and Dale versus Evil. You familiar with this movie?
I mean, I've heard of it, yeah.
Kind of a cult favorite. And years ago, because it was kind of a cult favorite, I'm like, I'll check it out. And I watched like 20 minutes and was like, eh, and I stopped watching. But I was like, we should try it again. And so Trish and I watched the whole thing. No. It is an extremely clever idea. It has some good performances, including a, I think, sort of Firefly era Alan Tudyk as Tucker, I think, maybe, or Dale. I don't know. And it's a very clever idea. It's a little it's a comedy. It's a horror comedy, and it's heavy. It's a comedy with gore is probably more accurate. It's not a scary movie. It's a comedy with a lot of gore in it. And the basic premise is two hillbillies are out in the woods, and some teenagers are also out in the woods, and the teenagers think that they're scary horror movie hillbillies, but they're not. They're just regular hillbillies, but then things happen that make it look like they're scary horror movie hillbillies, and it's a comedy of errors sort of deal.
I see.
And that's a real neat idea. And on paper, like if I told you the plot, you'd be like, that's clever. But it's just, it's got enough dumb. The comedy does not hold up. It's a lot of dumb shit that like they didn't do it. But if they made jokes that made homophobic slurs in the movie, I wouldn't have been surprised.
Oh, okay.
It's that level of humor. It's not necessarily right. That level of offensiveness, but it's very much a early 2000s comedy. Very broad in a dumb way that I didn't particularly enjoy.
Gotcha.
So I don't know that I would recommend that to anybody. And by sheer accident, we have just begun to watch a series that's also on HBO Max that maybe you have watched. Hopefully you've watched. You should have watched this if you haven't watched this. Over the Garden Wall.
I mean, we know about it. I don't remember who's in it.
Well, it's animated. It's actually a Cartoon Network show. that always, to me, just looked like a silly kids thing when I just would see bits from it or whatever. Elijah Wood is one of the voices in it, and at least in the first episode, Christopher Lloyd is, although I think he was just in that episode.
We've seen part. I don't think we saw a whole. I think we started watching it and something interrupted, but we have seen.
Okay, because they're short. They're 11-minute episodes,
mm-hmm.
and there's 10 of them.
Like a guy and his brother.
What
is it? A kid and his brother, or something?
Yes, yes. It's a kid and his brother. Like actually, they spend no time on the setup. A kid and his brother get lost in the woods, and apparently they have stumbled into a place called the unknown. That's a spooky, you know, world behind the world kind of thing. And then they have adventures trying to get home, and they spend no time. Like literally we start and there's a narrator explaining what the unknown is. And you just see these two brothers walking through the wood and they're like, where are we? And like, that's it. But
that's all you get.
It's some independent sources of, TV or YouTube sources have mentioned it recently. And I always just thought it was a very, one of the characters wears one of those red gnome hats. And so I thought it was a very like cute little kids thing. And I was like, I'm sure it's fine, but I was never interested. And then I kind of found out, no, it's like a spooky Halloween-y kind of thing, but like spooky, not scared.
Right.
I think a small child would be frightened. An older child would not be frightened. Adult, definitely not for it. But it's spooky like that, and it's also kind of funny at the same time. I definitely would say it's a comedy, and it's also, you know, and this is the biggest win for me in any of these nowadays. It's not like any other thing I've seen, and that gets huge points for me there. And it's very simple, but it's very clever at the same time. So I would recommend that. I had a lot of fun with that. We just finished season one of Loot on Apple TV Plus. I've talked about this one before. I don't know. Here's what I'll say. I'm not sorry I watched it. To my surprise, it's getting a second season. I didn't think it was, because whenever Apple TV does their commercials and ads for all their cool shows, they never mention Loot. And it's like the only one they don't seem to mention that I've heard of. Like, they mention Morning Show, they mention C, they mention Ted Lasso, of course, they mention Mythic Quest. And Severance, yeah, Severance. Nobody ever talks about Loot. And so I'm like, I guess it probably didn't do real well. But apparently, I looked it up. Apparently, it's getting a second season. And I think I will watch the second season.
Wow, that's quite a pause.
I think I've talked about this. I think I talked about this show before. And what I said before still sort of stands true. It's a show about a woman divorcing her billionaire husband, so she ends up with like $87 billion, and she finds herself in sort of a existential crisis because she doesn't know what to do with herself now that she's not his wife, and she decides to go start working at her charity that she founded a long time ago but has never had anything to do with, and they do work there, and you know, she doesn't understand how charity works, and you know, and it's supposed to be quirky about like the different lives coming together, and it's talking a lot about billionaires and class distinctions and how charity works without saying anything useful. It's taking that premise and turning it into a workplace comedy. And I found that annoying. And it probably didn't help that we had just finished watching season two of Woke, a show on Hulu that I also recommend, that was also a comedy about social issues that's had a hell of a lot to say, while also being quite funny. And I'm really kind of sad it got canceled after two seasons. But I will say, at the end of Loot, they finally achieved a realization that I think was good and correct. And like, they finally said what I was really annoyed they hadn't said so far. But the fact that it took them 10 episodes to do it kind of annoyed me. Because, well, here, I'll put it this way, because I said this to my wife after the penultimate episode. The biggest problem I have with the show is the primary character is a billionaire, and she's not a villain. She's not ethically complex. We're supposed to root for her. She's just a little ignorant, but we're supposed to root for her. And again, billionaires to me are by definition villains. I do not, we have had a long argument about this. My opinion has not changed. If you knowingly keep for personal wealth $1 billion or more, you are one of the biggest problems with how fucked up the world is today. And I do not think there is a version in which you can do that and not be the problem. The very nature of accumulating $1 billion worth of wealth in one person is the problem. And I'm not saying if you get $1 billion, you're automatically a billionaire, if you were a billion. What I am saying is you get maybe a year and a half, 2 years to do good with that money and keep, you can keep enough for yourself to be comfortable. If you keep $100 million, which is way more than you will ever need to live in the lap of luxury for the rest of your life, you know, it doesn't make you a fucking hero, but I'm not mad at you. But after that, if you're holding on to more than $1 billion, you are doing one of the fundamental base things that is fucking up the world today. And so the fact that Maya Rudolph is this cute, sweet little thing that we're supposed to root for and has $87 billion, I'm like, this doesn't, there's a disconnect in my head where I'm like, this doesn't work. That being said, the cast is amazing and they all give great performances and it can be quite funny at times. And there is a subplot, because it really is an ensemble show. There is a subplot involving a relationship between comedian Ron Funches and comedian Joel Kim Booster that I live for. It was brilliantly done, including the fact that it tracks the saga of a genuine platonic friendship between a gay man and a straight man, which very few things have managed to successfully do. So I do think it's worth watching, but it is absolutely skippable if you don't want to watch it. And you need to be prepared that its view on social stuff is a little, like I said, I feel like they got to a good place by the end of the season. And I'm pretty sure I know what second season is going to look like. Although they did that bullshit at the end where they threw in some weird, strange twists and cliffhangers at the last second, which I fucking hate. But, so that's there. Not a lot of, I mean, I watched some other movies, but they were definitely trash. like nothing. Have you seen, did you watch Lucky or Ghost Waits?
I didn't watch Lucky, but Abby reminded me that we did watch a Ghost Waits. We have seen it.
And?
It was interesting. I mean, it was, I mean, I think if I can recall the things you said about it, or at least I recalled them while we were watching it, because I actually watched it a long time ago and I didn't tell you. Because I'm an idiot.
You like to do that to me. I think you just.
I seem to think while I was watching it that all the points you made, I agreed with all of them basically. That, you know, it was an original idea. I mean, it's very, very low budget and all that, but they clearly got a lot out of what they had. And, you know, unless you're really particular about
your production values.
Yeah, unless you're really particular about that, I think it's worth watching to see someone do something interesting.
I think I told you this. We actually backed it up. There's a scene where he orders pizza and he opens it up and like the doorbell rings or something and he has to go deal with that or whatever. And I think there's ghosts involved. I don't remember. But the point is, then he comes back later. It's a different fucking pizza. And really? Like, obviously so. The box looks the same. But, like, it wasn't even the same shape. Like, one of them was square and one of them was round. Trish caught it. And she's like, back it up. And it's not a plot point. Because he still just eats the pizza. And he doesn't notice that it's a different pizza. It's clearly just, like, that one got gross while they were filming and they had to switch it out. Like, that's the level of production value we have here. Although, I think they really like did well with what is clearly the $5 they had. Am I keeping you from something? You're looking out the window a lot.
I'm sorry.
Either that or you're trying to peek into my house.
No, there's a UPS truck.
And you don't get nothing.
Yes, we do. And people get stuff stolen off their porch. So I have to.
I do love the UPS trucks have their number on it now. And it's 1-800-PICK-UPS. Or 1-800-PICKUPS.
Yeah.
I think that's very clever. And I don't know if they did it on purpose. I hope they did, but I think it's very clever.
I don't know. I mean, I always thought of the fact that you could, when you see UPS, you could pronounce it oops. I didn't think I didn't think a delivery service ought to be called oops.
Also good. I'm trying to. Okay, so you haven't watched Lucky yet. All right. But yeah, you watched it this way, so that's good. Yeah, well, now you can add to the list. Whatever the hell I was just talking about. One of the movies I said that was good. Oh, no, I don't remember. I do have another movie I was just talking about that I watched last night.
Okay.
It's a movie that I've known about for a while that looked amazing, but like in a fucking crazy way, And so I could never quite bring myself to sit down and watch it. Because, like, I'm like, this is just... Well, I should back up. It's a 70s sci-fi movie.
Oh.
And so I'm like, I'm sure it's going to be bonkers. It could very well be bonkers in an incredibly tedious way. So I couldn't ever get myself to watch it. And then it showed up on Riff Tracks.
Mm.
And so last night I watched the Riff Tracks version. And it's bonkers. And I actually recommend people check out this movie. In general, it's probably better if you do the Riff Tracks version, but I think even without it, it's amazing. Because the thing is, I don't even know that I think it's a bad movie, and it wasn't poorly received at the time. It's called The Visitor, and it's from the late 70s. And it has it's an Italian film, but it has an insane cast. It has John Huston in one of the main roles, a very young Lance Hendrick, Shelley Winters, Glenn Ford, Sam Peckinpah. Steve's his brother and doesn't act. I didn't know Sam Peckinpah act. I think of him as a director, but he's in a small part in it. Just a ton of big names for the time. And it's basically a sci-fi version of The Omen, is the best way to explain it. Like, it's all about this intergalactic battle between good and evil, but it's like, it gets explained to you by a dude who's literally he's uncredited, who's played by Frank Nero, who's another pretty decent name, but it's clearly Jesus. Like, they made him look like space Jesus. And in fact, when you look it up on IMDb, it says Jesus Christ uncredited. Like, it's very clearly. And the whole deal is that there's a girl who's got evil inside of her on Earth. And so we have to go to Earth and stop her. And she's a little 8-year-old girl. And she does a tremendous job. I looked her up. She was in like 7 things as a child. She lives in Atlanta, born and raised in Atlanta, which is where the thing was primarily filmed. And now owns her own makeup studio and is a makeup artist and something else. Like, she's got quite the career going that has nothing to do with show business anymore. But she did real well. Like evil devil 8-year-old girl. She nailed it. But it's just absolutely insane music. The plot is, it's definitely one of those where I went to Wikipedia and looked up it later, and I, like, 7 different times I was like, oh, that's what that was. Like, it's one of those, like, I could give you the gist of the plot, but there were a whole bunch of things I didn't really understand until Wikipedia explained it to me. And I think even now, if I watched it again, there would be a lot of bits that are a mess. But it's very impressive and just bonkers. And yeah, and some really good acting talent that has no business being in a movie like this. But so I would recommend The Visitor to people. It's kind of cool. And I'm obsessed with the 70s. I think the 70s was an era of creative freedom that has sort of never been rivaled. And that's not necessarily a good thing, because there was a lot of garbage and a lot of really offensive and terrible shit that also came out of the 80s. But it was a time where doing really sort of outre things was almost mainstream. It's a decade that doubles as its own art installation. And I really love that. Earnest creativity, even when it sucks, is something I really enjoy. And the 70s was so full of earnest creativity and people trying new things. And the vast majority of them did not work. But it's the same reason why I love The Room. I don't love The Room because it's so bad it's good. I mean, there is that. But again, the blind, dedicated earnestness in your art, especially in the face of what is very clearly no quality, is something I just really enjoy. I really enjoy watching people really into what they're doing. I will watch the shittiest movie if it seems like everyone involved is really into it. But and I make jokes about this, about like Krull, the movie Krull, and people say it's a bad movie, which is not actually, for an 80s sci-fi epic, it's pretty good. But also, as I say in that movie, I'm not in that movie. As I say about that movie, they act so hard in that movie. I don't mean they act so well, but they are acting hard. They are really trying to act. And that doesn't just mean William Shatner. Sometimes it's quiet. But the point is, like, they're very clearly, like, lots of acting should be effortless. Arguably, almost all acting should be effortless. Nothing in Krull, they all look like they're trying real hard. And I appreciate that on a level that has nothing to do with acting quality. And this was very similar. And it's just so weird. John Huston, especially, that man had such a storied career as an actor and a director and a writer. And he is game for this. He is doing it. And he has no business in a movie like this and in a role like this. And also the entire movie, he's just in a khaki suit. He's a man from the stars, and he's just in a khaki suit and occasionally like a bucket hat. but he is not phoning it in at all. And it's just amazing. And Shelley Winters, her part isn't as big, but she's given it. Lance Hendrickson actually is actually a bit sedate for himself, but I think that's not necessarily bad for Lance Hendrickson. It's a change of pace. So yeah, I just had a lot of fun with this. It's called The Visitor. I think you can watch it on Shudder. You can watch it, I'm pretty sure. And on Riftrex you can watch it, and on Amazon I'm sure you can at least rent the Riftrex version on Amazon. Maybe others. So if you all think 70s sci-fi is a hoot, then maybe check it out. It also does very much borrow heavily from contemporary movies at the time. There's some Exorcist in there. There's The Birds in there. There's some Close Encounters of the Third Kind in there. It's interesting. I think it's an interesting movie in addition to being absolutely batshit and very entertaining. I think that's it. We're already over time, so I don't think we're getting to anything. I apologize. We had a lot to catch up on. Y'all, longtime listeners, of which that's all we have, know whenever we have to skip a week, this happens.
Yep.
Because we got a lot to catch up on. And it's not like we did beforehand. It's not like we got together earlier and how you doing? I mean, William didn't even know I'd been gone. So it appears the sun is setting where you are. So we definitely should wrap it up. What time zone are you in? You're in LA, right?
I'm in the Coralville time zone.
Coralville time zone.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's all we got for this week. Do please write in. We're down to very few questions. I shouldn't say questions. Emails. Again, I don't want to restrict you at all in what you email. Email is whatever you feel like. And we will be forced to spark conversation from it.
Yeah, I guess.
And doesn't that sound fun? Check that out. So yeah, write us. TheMagicalTalkingHead@gmail.com. Also, I don't know who's left that hasn't done it, but if you are listening to this and I have told you to go to aethertheater.com and you haven't, do it. It is a great way to kill an afternoon. I mean, there is a lot. Again, this is the same thing. There's so much earnest creative work on that website. I'm not going to speak to quality, but it is clear that whoever made that was creating so hard when they did it. And there's a webcomic, and there's movies, and there's novels, and they all involve at least some people that y'all know. Maggie, you really should go check it out. Oh, Maggie started checking that out earlier. I'm not sure Maggie's still around. I don't know. I hope so.
Hope so too.
Because otherwise we're down to like three listeners. Also, go to smashwords.com and look up Odd Wings, my book. Read it, enjoy it, or at least tell people you enjoyed it, and make them read it. And go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us your feelings on 70s sci-fi, paranormal. All right, people. I refuse to believe that the listeners we have, that are good, loyal hatters, had nothing to say about the hour and a half long talk we had about a haunting last week. And yet, there are no comments. So I am left to believe y'all been kidnapped. But like, Azure Talon, Jazz, probably Beth, like, there's no way you don't have shit to say about that. So go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us your thoughts on that. And also your thoughts on Oregon weed, because we all have them. Don't pretend you don't have thoughts on Oregon weed. Stop lying.
Okay. Sorry, you're right. I've got thoughts on
it. Does. He's very private about those. That's the thing that occurred to me. You're going to make a terrible therapist.
How's that?
Oh, God, you didn't even chuckle. You're just like, oh, really? Yeah, okay. Because people are going to end up wanting to tell you details about their sex life.
That's different.
How?
What's my job?
All right. Because we went through hypotheticals where a man and a woman who you were friends with came to you hoping you could help them, and they both agreed that they wanted you to know this stuff, and you still were like, no. Well, but apparently, if those people paid you, you'd be like, okay, bring it.
Or if it was otherwise my job. Like, if I was a minister, say, and they're not paying me personally. I mean, I'm getting paid.
God's paying you.
Whoever. General Conference is paying me, or they're not paying me, but I am their minister. So yeah, I would listen to whatever they have to say, and I try to help them out.
But this is interesting to me, because in the original idea where it's not your job, it's not just that you didn't want to hear it. It's that talking about the idea of you theoretically hearing it made you squirm so much you turned into a little puddle of silly putty on the floor.
Well,
like, just the thought of that happening made your bowels evacuate.
I mean, I probably,
but somehow, if it's your job, you're like, what problem? Let's get into what the weird thing on your dick is. Come on.
That's not that unusual. Most people, I mean, there are a lot of people who are EMTs, for example. You know, they can go, they can do their work with horrible scenes of accidents and everything else, but they probably don't, you know, outside of their work, they're probably not interested in seeing severed limbs and
that idea is fine, but that's not what's happening here. What's happening here is you're an EMT and you can handle all this terrible stuff. But if I tell you, hey, William, imagine you weren't on duty and you saw somebody like cut themselves and blood came out, you'd be like, oh my God, I might faint.
Somebody I know, you're saying. I seem to recall the scenario was, these are two people I know. I was probably imagining two specific people.
So if they got hurt, you'd pass out. If you were on a shift as an EMT, you'd be fine.
I mean, I don't know.
That's the part that gets me. Like, not preferring something, but being able to do it in an official capacity. That I get. But like, I can barely sit still even thinking about the idea of doing something. But if it's my job, fine. That one I have a harder time with. Like, just the idea of overcoming what is clearly a borderline clinical phobia you have of hearing about other people's sexual lives.
I mean, there's a context that works and a context that doesn't. And when the context doesn't, it really doesn't. But I don't know what to say.
I'm going to have to switch therapists when you open a practice just to troll you.
I wouldn't be able to see you ethically.
Here's your Tuesday afternoon appointment. Hey, William, you're now required to hear this stuff. I got to tell you about my butt.
It would be unethical for me to be your counselor.
No, you're right. It would be a pretty big conflict of interest. But if I wore a disguise and used a fake name. See,
even the profession understands this wall between these two things.
Yeah, I suspect that when we were playing the hypothetical game before, if I had told you they were strangers, that would not have helped.
It's hard to say.
You might have said it's better than the other, but
yeah, you might be right. But I don't know. I can't remember the exact.
I prefer to think of it as you've grown as a person, and I'm so proud of you for that.
I'm quite certain my answer would have been the same about if it were my job. Although back then I might have said, so therefore I'm not interested in having a job like that.
Oh,
I might have said, if it were my job, I would do it. But that's why it's not my job, because I don't want to do it.
Interesting. So
I think you're right. That has probably changed over time.
I don't know if you can hear it, but Addy has things to say about this. He's back there yelling. All right. Remember when I ended the podcast like 10 minutes ago? Well, why are you still here?
It's a Midwest goodbye.
Get out.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.